Luke. Luke.
Ben?
You will listen to the Wampa's Lair podcast.
Podcast?
There you will hear your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, as they discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out. Oh, and watch out for Wampas.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 165, Your First Steps. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the General Hux to my Grand Moff Tarkin, we have Carl LeClaire.
Is it just because I'm not younger than you? That makes no sense. But I'll take it.
I just wanted to be Grand Moff Tarkin so I could say Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah, I have been known to get angry like Mr. Hux, so, excuse me, General.
Mr. Hux.
Generals.
I wonder what his first name is.
Oh, man, well, did we know Tarkin's first name in 77?
I don't know. I think like the book probably told us. Okay, Wilhuff.
Wilhuff, yeah. Wilhuff. I bet you Hux's first name is...
Phil. Phil,
yeah,
Hux.
Probably Phil Hux, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. It's not even Philip. His full name isn't Philip. It's just Phil. Phil Hux.
Phil. Just Phil Hux.
Phil Hux. He has no middle name.
Nope.
So anyway, welcome back to the Wampa's Lair, where we're going to be talking comparisons of General Hux and Grand Moff Tarkin the whole episode. I'm just kidding.
No, not really.
Where is your rebel base?
Yes.
As we destroy the New Republic!
He's so just angry. Like, in that
so
scene.
Angry.
It's so, I think it's great, though. It's so,
it's
like,
great. He's such a,
it's literally Hitler, so. No, but we're going to be talking in today's episode. I'm so excited, Jason, because this is the first time we get to bleed all our trilogies together. Well, even though we only have one film of the sequel trilogy, but we're going to be looking at the PT, the OT, and the ST all at once. So we're going to look at kind of the big heroic threes, like calls to adventure, their initial call to adventure, and kind of how they respond and how they free themselves up to respond. So we'll be looking at Anakin, Luke, and Rey today, which is so exciting.
Yes.
But before we even get to that, Jason, we had a poll for the greatest Star Wars film of all time, the greatest film of all time, in my opinion, The Empire Strikes Back. And this might be the most responses we've gotten. What do you think?
That is entirely possible. I know we had well over 20 just on Facebook, and then we had a couple on Twitter and an email as well. So, without any further ado, these are your Larian responses to what one word would you use to describe The Empire Strikes Back. Rue Eckhart says brilliant. Lyle Ketchum, one does not simply use one word to describe The Empire Strikes Back.
Correct.
Thomas Babcock says game changer. Elliot Peters, perfect. Jordan Paris, incredible. Lawrence Trujillo, Yoda. Austin Chenal, struggle. Franklin Taylor, road trip. James Southard says GOAT, and then in parentheses, greatest of all time. He was using an acronym. Jazz Kopacek Raythor says mysterious. Michael C. Smith, timeless. Karsten says plot twist. Or surprise. Brian V. Klein, perfection. Ubaidullah Abdul Malik says Twilight. Jessica Baker, epic. Philip Liebold, chilling. James Bryson Greger, tragic. David Revelation. Herman Mutant, I'm not sure. Sorry. Awesome. Joe Cinta, yikes. Roger Tavernier, relentless. Borodori MacArthur, tragic. Jeffrey Fishbach, dark. And on Twitter, we got a couple responses. At Balls in Play says perfection. Seriously, Empire is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's my favorite version of Yoda. I buy the blooming Han and Leia romance. Empire has the best climax of any Star Wars film. It's the best. At Clark Kent 0019, thickens, as in what the plot does. Dave Pisani 75, one word for Empire, revealing. And at Matt C. Watson says Wampa. And finally, we got an email from Lyndon Kaiser who says development. So that is your Larian responses to what one word you would use to describe the Empire Strikes Back. And of course, if you want our thoughts on that, go back and listen to the episode entitled How Feel You?
Yeah.
Because that was a fun episode.
It was a fun episode.
Which is why we're doing these polls, is we wanted everyone else to get involved with it. So. Yeah.
And we got to cheat a little because we got to use a scene to illustrate our point.
So. Yes, but it's our podcast. So
we are the podcast.
I am the podcast.
Jason tells me that every time before we start recording. He reminds me.
Yes. Like, watch it, Carl. I am the podcast. Every time Carl does an episode by himself, I'm actually pulling the strings behind the scenes.
Yeah, Jason tells me what I'm allowed to discuss, what's off the table. Then he reached out to Jazz and Joe last time, and he said, here's what you're allowed to say, here's what you can't say. So
right.
We play within his parameters, to let you just so you know. This is Jason's playground.
This is my podcast. Anyway, I'm going to stop that now. We have another great poll, obviously, at the end of the show for you. Stick around for that. But before we get there, Carl.
Yes.
Why don't we jump into our topic for today?
If you insist.
I do.
Our topic is very sandy. You know, it's rough and coarse and irritating. And it gets everywhere.
It gets everywhere.
I love that line. I don't care what people say. Oh, Hayden. It cracks me up. I did actually this complete tangent real quick before we get into the topic. I was every night when I like go to sleep, I have to like have a video playing in the background. So I usually throw up like a YouTube video. It's usually like a nature documentary or a space documentary or like a Star Wars documentary. And I found a clip last night of Hayden Christensen at San Diego Comic-Con in 2005, shortly before Revenge of the Sith came out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of a weird dude, Hayden Christensen.
Uh-huh.
Just his acting isn't much different than his real life personality. He's just kind of, I don't want to say dull because I don't want to be like insulting. He's not dull, but he's just very quiet. I would put it like even on stage, like, you know,
very reserved.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. So it's interesting. Like he has a very good presence on screen. No doubt about that. We'll go down forever saying Hayden Christensen is a great physical Darth Vader actor, Anakin Skywalker actor. But even the way he just talks in his normal everyday speech, it is a little bit dull and reserved. So I just found it very interesting. And then you had Rick McCallum up there, and he's just a goofball in my opinion. So, but in a good way, he's adorable. So, but anyway, okay, side tangent over.
Tangent finished.
Topic started.
Excellent.
But in case you all didn't know, the Star Wars films typically follow a little bit of a hero's journey. Granted, Anakin's story is a tragic fall, but he starts off on a hero's journey. Luke obviously will have a hero's journey. Rey's clearly on the path of a hero's journey. Finn kind of is too, by the way.
Yes.
But you know, we figured it'd be fun to kind of go through these Skywalkers, potentially Skywalkers. I really hope Rey is a Skywalker, but we'll find out in episode 8.
We shall.
And I know some folks don't want her to be. Some folks want her to be a Kenobi, which I can't get behind at all.
I just do the awkward turtle.
Yeah, exactly. but be that as it may, I thought it'd be fun to kind of look at these kind of early steps of the hero's journey of our big heroic three, if you will. So a friend of mine, his name's Greg. Greg is my friend that I met on Force Friday, who is my only Star Wars friend in Boston, which is fantastic because he's awesome. And he's brilliant, too. He's a college professor of literature, so he knows a thing or two about the hero's journey.
So why is he not on the podcast?
Well, that's what I was just going to say. I told him last time he was over that I really want to get him on here and give us a dissertation on the hero's journey. But he's incredibly bright. Oh, my gosh. So hopefully we'll have him on soon to kind of break it down in a more intellectual way, I guess. So, but that'd
be cool.
But we're not stupid, Jason. So we'll give it a go. So, anywho, let's start with Anakin. And Lanny. I will say, you know, somebody at work the other day was asking me if I honestly like the prequels. And I said, I honestly do. And they said, but, like, is there things about them you don't like? I said, of course there is. You know, there's things about, in a sense, there's a thing in every, there's probably something in every single Star Wars movie that I don't necessarily like. But as a whole, they're great. And I said, you know, the only big complaint I still have about the prequels is Jake Lloyd. And that's the thing. Like, Phantom Menace to me is the strongest prequel film if it weren't for Jake Lloyd. I don't even mind Jar Jar anymore. I don't care. Like, you've converted me. Not to a lover, but to at least an enjoyer.
yes. Victory.
But, yeah, I mean, I can't identify with a 9-year-old boy. And I don't think a lot of the audience could. And it's funny because I just finished reading How Star Wars Conquered the Universe. I think it's by Chris Taylor is the author. But in there, in his chapter about, like, how they developed Phantom Menace, he mentions that George Lucas was warned by several friends, specifically Steven Spielberg, don't make the star of your film a 9-year-old boy. Audiences won't identify. But George just, you know, George has his way of doing things, and that's what he did. And I don't think Jake
George does what George does.
Right. And Jake's not a bad actor for a 9-year-old boy. It's just that identification is a little bit harder. However, I think it's still easy really to talk about his character anyway, just because there is still something very primal about his character. And there is something beneath the acting and maybe the age that we can still identify with. So it's still easy for me to enjoy that character in the film, even if I don't love the character's portrayal, if that makes sense. So I think there's still plenty of meat there, even if on the surface you're not crazy about it. I think if you just dig a little bit deeper, George still tells a great story. So,
and see, I think what George was going for, and, like, we know him, George, but I think what Mr. Lucas was going for is trying to,
Solo?
trying to have Anakin be that young for the kids that were coming into the new kids that were being introduced to Star Wars, with the Phantom Menace. And, I know at my age, I was 10, when I saw the Phantom Menace. And so he didn't bother me at all. And I thought he was fine. Of course, Jar Jar ended up being my favorite character, but, that's because I thought he was hysterical. But yeah, no, Anakin at that age, especially, appealed to me. So, and I think that's what he was going for. But then again, I don't think he expected the fervor of the fans who had seen the original trilogy when they came in to see the prequel trilogy and how they would react to it. So, but that's a side tangent. Anyways.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Yeah, but let's look at Anakin. I mean, pretty simple story. He's a slave. But, you know, one of the very early things we learn about Anakin, which is extremely important to the fact that he's going to kind of embark on this journey, is, you know, at that lunch scene where they're all sitting together, Anakin talks about his dream as becoming a Jedi and coming back to free all the slaves. So Anakin already has this dream of his to become a Jedi, to become something greater than just a slave. And it's interesting too, because it's kind of a twofold little dream there, right? Like, it's the dream of becoming something better, becoming something of significance, because right now he's kind of a nobody, he's a slave.
Right.
So he wants to become someone of significance and somebody noble like a Jedi Knight, but it's not just for the sake of himself, it's also for the sake of coming back to free the slave. So again, we learn a lot about Anakin's character right off the bat. He's somebody who wants something more, but not just for himself. He wants to become something more so as to benefit others, which is really important.
Exactly, exactly. And he's a bright kid who's ended up in this situation through no fault of his own, who's obviously talented enough and smart enough and to be well beyond where he's at. But just due to circumstances, he has no power to change his circumstances. And this is, of course, where a Jedi walks in and is able to completely rock his world. in a sense, you know, completely change everything for him. And, of course, we from Qui-Gon's perspective, he wasn't there to free slaves. He says that flat out. But because of the will of the Force, he's there, and he has to do something about this.
We get that other great scene, which I used in that episode you mentioned earlier, How Feel You. The scene, though, where Anakin is looking up at the stars, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to be the first one to see them all. Again, this is... all of our heroes have kind of that dreamer sequence. This is Anakin's to me. You know, it's him looking up at the stars. The stars in at least in biblical literature, you know, what that kind of represents symbolically is infinite potential. And I'm sure it's not just reserved to biblical literature. I'm sure all sorts of ancient myths had stars kind of represent that idea of, you know, looking at the stars, becoming one with the stars, this idea of, you know, maximizing your potential. And I think that's what, you know, Anakin's kind of talking about that. He wants to do something more, right? He's dreaming big. But he can't because he's a slave. So that's really what's binding Anakin from his journey right now. So Qui-Gon has to do something about that. If Anakin's going to start this journey, he has to be freed of his slavery, right? Like, before you can set out on that adventure, you have to let go of what's actually keeping you where you are. So what's keeping Anakin is the fact that he's a slave.
And the funny thing about Anakin is that he has a slightly different situation than Luke and Rey, in that when he starts doing the pod race, he thinks he's racing just to help his friends. But in reality, he's racing for his own freedom too. But he has no idea. He has no clue that that is one of the stakes here. And by some miracle of the Force, Anakin is able to make it through the Bunta Eve Classic and win the race, thus securing both the parts that Qui-Gon needed and his own freedom. And this is where things get interesting, because then we go into the reveal that you've been freed and he can leave the planet, and he's so excited at first. This is what he always wanted. This is what he always dreamed about doing. And then as he's heading off to go pack, he realizes, wait, Mom's not coming.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure this is where you wanted to go next.
Yeah, no. Well, we're so two peas in a pod, Jason.
I know.
But no, it's true. I mean, and Anakin is the first one who is initially like, you know, Qui-Gon says, you know, you've been freed. Is he to come with me? Is he going to be a Jedi? And he says, yes. And Anakin's so excited to go until he realizes, wait, Mom can't come? And that's exactly right. You know, there is this reservation. I don't think he flat out refuses, but there is that reservation. You know, this is a boy who grew up and has spent all 9 or 10 years of his life with his mother at his side, who cared for him, who loved him, who gave him a sense of self in the midst of slavery. You know, that says a lot. So even though he's, by, you know, sociological aspects, a nobody, his mother tells him he's somebody.
Right.
So now he has to say goodbye to her. So of course there's that reservation. He doesn't want to go. But she's the one who, again, her willingness to send him forth, to see him succeed, the love of a good mother is really what Shmi represents. Is she's the one, though, who she gives him that permission. Don't be reserved about this. Don't worry. Just go.
Her impact on the saga is one of the most underrated things, I think. Shmi Skywalker is so important to the development of Anakin, to his journey, and then unfortunately also to his fall. But she is incredibly important to the entire prequel trilogy.
Absolutely. And again, it's her permission that allows him to go. But what's interesting is when Anakin leaves, he does make a promise. He says, I'm going to come back and free you. So Anakin, he still kind of takes that reservation with him, in the sense that, you know, all right, well, if I'm going to go, and if I'm going to go do this, I've got to do something more with it. I, you know, that dream was I'd be a Jedi, so I'd come back and free all the slaves. But he looks right at his mother and he says, I will come back and free you. And think about how the level of impact that that's going to have on him later when he, you know, fails.
Right.
That. So, Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. So when he embarks on this journey, he does it under the, you know, he gets the invitation, and he goes because of the approval and the encouragement of his mother. But he leaves this promise behind. You know, I'm going to do this so that I can save you.
Right, right. And so in doing so, ties himself back to Tatooine, back to his mother, back to his situation and his circumstances there. And he doesn't let that go. Which is also one of the unique things about Anakin and his call to adventure. And in many cases, as we'll see with, especially with Luke, Luke cuts all ties. And we'll get to that in a minute. But Anakin ties himself back so that he's always looking behind him as he goes on this journey so that he can go back and free his mother. And it's hard to move forward when you're looking behind. So,
yeah, absolutely. I think that's really Anakin's initial call. Mm-hmm. I kind of, you know, everything just kind of falls into place, and it does. It follows that structure very well.
It does. It does. So now let's move on to his son.
Yes.
Luke Skywalker.
But I was going to Tashi Station to pick up some power converters.
You can waste time with your friends when your chores are done. Now, come on, get to it.
All right. And the red one. Come on. And there's... Yeah.
Sorry.
Uncle Owen, this R2 has a bad motivator. Look.
Hey, what are you trying to push on us? Slam it!
Oh, man. But no, I mean, we get a lot of initial setup of who Luke is at this point of his life. And
He's a dreamer.
And he's also bored.
Incredibly bored.
It was the experience I had every time I go back to my hometown now. Is after like a day or two, I'm incredibly bored because there's not a whole lot of life there for me anymore. I don't mean that as a knock on anyone or anything. I love my family, but you know, I don't have really any friends there anymore. You know, there's not that connection. And I think, you know, that's where kind of Luke is he doesn't have much on Tatooine. He kind of has his aunt and uncle, his friend Biggs, and then, you know, some other people that he probably just tolerates at Tashi Station. It's just people
that tolerate him is more likely.
Yeah, exactly. You get a lot of that fleshed out in the radio drama, as well as some of the deleted scenes. So that stuff was originally in the film. But that's exactly it. When we meet Luke, he has this dream of adventure. He doesn't know exactly what it looks like, but at least for him right now, what he wants that to be is he wants to leave to go to the academy.
Because that's what his friend Biggs did.
Exactly.
And Biggs is his best friend.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Are you okay?
No, yeah, yeah.
Just froze for a second.
Oh, we're good.
Okay. Sorry. All right. But yeah. Biggs is his best friend, and he wants to do what Biggs did, so he can hopefully reunite with Biggs out in this big adventure, you know, that he's been dreaming of. The thing is with Luke is he's a total without any real way to achieve that dream.
Right.
I mean, there's the academy, but he keeps getting pulled back by his uncle.
Yeah.
Saying, next year.
Right.
And of course, we find out later that Uncle Owen is trying to keep him as isolated as possible because he doesn't want him to become like his father.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing that keeps... Just like Anakin's bound to Tatooine because he's a slave, Luke is bound to Tatooine because of his perceived obligation to his family, you know, to his aunt and uncle. And as much as he wants to leave, right, like he's, in a sense, like he's a young adult. He can go. He doesn't need, you know, he could go sign up for the academy and they'll take care of him. You know, he'll have a place to live. He'll have food and shelter. He could go do that. But yet, because he doesn't have the blessing of his aunt, well, I think he would have it from Aunt Beru, but because he doesn't have it from both Owen and Beru, he won't go. And that's interesting, right? Too, right? Like, imagine if Shmi had said to Anakin, like, I won't know what to do without you. He probably wouldn't have gone.
No, you know? He wouldn't.
So that's
yeah, there's important. there's no way Anakin would have left if she'd said that.
Yeah. So you know that that sense of permission from your family really has a lot to do with embarking on the journey, and Luke doesn't have it, so he's not going to go. He's not going to go until Owen says it's okay. Which exactly. Owen's probably thinking that's not going to happen.
Right. Hence why he goes outside, kicks some sand, and stares off into the sunsets.
Yes.
So.
It's a very iconic scene.
It is a very iconic scene.
I recommend watching it if you haven't seen it.
Right. But of course,
yeah,
he gets a little bit of a call to adventure in the form of a couple of droids that his uncle ends up buying. R2-D2 and C-3PO show up with a little message from a princess asking for an Obi-Wan Kenobi. I don't know any Obi-Wan, but there's old Ben.
So who is
then
it?
We see the call to adventure begin to take root. So, of course, R2, being R2, decides to just leave everybody and go in search of Obi-Wan on his little lonesome. Which means Luke has to go look for him in the morning. Mm-hmm. And that's what gets him into trouble or into his adventure, whichever you prefer.
Right. Yep. And that's the thing. Right. He'll finally meet Obi-Wan Kenobi. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Obi-Wan. Now that's a name I have not heard in a long time. A long time.
Well, my uncle said he was dead.
Oh, he's not dead. Not yet.
Oh, you know him.
Well, of course I know him. He's me. I haven't gone by the name of Obi-Wan since, before you were born. Well, that's not exactly true, but around that time.
The Jason Hunt director's cut, everyone.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
But, so obviously, yeah.
A little bit of sunstroke. Yeah. Sorry.
But he meets Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan is going to, you know, he gets to hear the full message, finally. He's intrigued, and he's obviously, he's got the hots for his sister, weird. But
he doesn't know.
Yeah, he doesn't know, exactly. Unless George Lucas didn't come up with that until he wrote Return of the Jedi anyway, so neither did George.
Right.
Nobody knew. But, you know, Luke is certainly intrigued, and you know, his interest is piqued, and Obi-Wan, you know, that video ends and he says, you know, you must come to Alderaan with me. You must learn the ways of the Force if you're to come with me to Alderaan. You know, Alderaan? I'm not going to Alderaan. It's late. I'm in for it as it is.
It's so funny because he's been this big dreamer. He wants to go to the academy and all this stuff. And the second Obi-Wan gives him that out, he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This isn't the way I saw it going. So, which is funny because I feel like many of us would react that way. All of a sudden, wide open, go for it. And we go, wait, is this really what I wanted?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, I mean, he does. It's this is literally the classic refusal of the call that from Joseph Campbell. Luke doesn't go initially because he says he has work to do. He's reluctant to leave his comfort zone. As much as he wants to do it, and he wants his life to change, he's reluctant to because he's kind of always lived in this like little comfortable bubble, and he's scared to leave it, which makes sense. When anytime we're called on any sort of adventure or called to do something new or become something different, there's always that reluctance because it's so much different and shocking from what we're used to that we don't really know how to make that change. And that's exactly where Luke is. As much as he wants it, and Obi-Wan is laying it right out there for him, and saying, I will be your guide. And Luke is saying, whoa, no way. I'm not ready for that. You know, his obligation to his family is still keeping him there.
Exactly. Exactly. But unfortunately for Luke, that obligation is kind of, how should we put it, eliminated?
Immolated?
Immolated. There you go. Crispy fried.
Wow.
But that's Yeah, his aunt and uncle are killed because of R2 and 3PO, and Luke has no further tie to Tatooine. And this is where I said, you know, especially he's differs from Anakin, because Anakin has that tie. He has that tie back to Tatooine, his mother. Luke has nothing left on Tatooine to keep him here. And so he's ready to cut all ties and run and off on this adventure with Obi-Wan Kenobi. And later on, he says, I'm never coming back here. He has no plans of ever coming back to Tatooine. So he jumps full force into his adventure and answers that call without any reservations.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's when they go to the wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Yep. But yeah, and you're right. You know, just like, you know, Anakin loses his obligation to Tatooine by being freed, Luke loses his obligation to Tatooine by the death of his aunt and uncle. And it's an unfortunate event, and certainly Luke didn't want that, but at least he recognizes that this is now everything that was holding him here, everything that was kept him in his comfort zone is gone. His comfort zone is gone. His safety is gone. So right. It just makes sense to now embark on that journey. But kind of like Anakin, he also makes a promise, and he promises to become a Jedi. You know, I want to learn the ways of the Force and become a Jedi like my father.
Right, exactly. And that is what he is pursuing now on this adventure, this call.
Right.
Is to learn the ways of the Force and become that Jedi. Which, of course, by the end of Return of the Jedi, he says, I'm a Jedi like my father before me. Which is one of the best scenes in that movie ever.
Oh, definitely. So, one of the best scenes in cinema, in my opinion.
One of the best scenes in Star Wars, period.
For sure.
So, anyway.
Right after, like, Jar Jar steps in the poop and goes, ah, poo doo.
Icky girl. Icky girl.
Yeah. I jest. But yeah, no, and that's exactly it. So Luke is going to finally embark on his journey. He's going after what he's kind of always wanted to a degree. He didn't know what a Jedi was, really. Obi-Wan kind of teaches him that in a very brief way. But now he knows, well, this is what my father was. This is who he's kind of always wanted to know about. I'm going to go become that. I'm going to go fulfill my true family lineage. So Luke, again, he has that freedom to now pursue this adventure, and he does it, again, with a very clear intention of becoming a Jedi.
Exactly. So,
and that makes sense, too. When you're embarking on something new, it's good to have a direction. It's good to have kind of a goal in mind. Because otherwise it's just jumping into the dark just for the sake of jumping into the dark. Luke has, there's a meaning behind this call for Luke now.
Right.
So, and it's cool too, because it's more fleshed out than what he was thinking of before. It's something even more direct than just joining the Academy and seeing what happens from there. Because he also knows that Biggs joined the Academy just to jump ship, mm-hmm. which we can suspect that's probably what Luke was going to do.
Exactly. So. Exactly. And now there's a greater purpose at work that he's subscribed onto. So,
yeah. But shall we go to the last hopeful Skywalker?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go on to Rey. And she's interesting because I think her call to adventure and her accepting that call takes most of the movie to get through.
Yeah.
With Anakin and with Luke, we see that in their first, you know, set of interactions. With Anakin, that's all, you know, mostly that middle part of The Phantom Menace. With Luke, it's that first part of A New Hope. With Rey, I feel like it takes her most of the movie up until she, you know, that duel with Kylo Ren before she fully accepts and answers that call. Which is interesting.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, when I sat down last night to kind of put these notes together, Anakin and Luke were so easy. Like, everything had like that very clear, consistent flow to it. And Rey she's different. She's similar, but different. Anakin and Luke are similar, but different as well. But I think there's a greater degree of difference between Rey and these previous two. Because it is, there's a very clear point at which Anakin and Luke both decide, okay, I'm going to pursue this call to adventure, and to fulfill this inherent destiny that seems to be attached to me. Rey is, It does. It almost takes the whole movie. You know,
you could, and it's hard to tell sort of where her head is at with some of this stuff because we have so little of her backstory. We do know she's been on Jakku for a while, left there as a kid. It's almost like an indentured servant to this Unkar Platt guy, which he's not a fan of Unkar Platt.
He's a moof milker.
What?
He's just a moof milker.
He is a moof milker. I still think it's hysterical that they got Harrison Ford to say moof milker.
Yeah.
anyway, but she's been basically like an indentured servant to this guy for years now. And obviously, she's got this dream to get off planet. She's got this dream to go off world and get out of this situation as we, you know, see her watching that starship leave as she's eating her, you know, her food there at the foot of her AT-AT house. Literally at the foot of it.
I want to get one of those welcome home signs with an AT-AT under it.
Nice. But she also feels a very distinct tie to Jakku, an obligation to stay there because of her family. Her family's going to be coming back for her. And she says this repeatedly throughout the movie. You know, even when she's off Jakku, she's like, I have to go back. I've been gone too long. I have to be there when my family comes back. And this is a very interesting situation. This is where she's all set up with. You know, she wants to get off. She has dreams of leaving. But she is set on staying until something happens. Something specific that she is expecting to happen happens. Which is interesting.
Yeah. You know, and she has a similar beginning structure as both Anakin and Luke in the sense that she's a nobody in the greater scheme of things.
The greater scheme of things?
The greater scheme of things, thank you. Come on, stupid.
Greater. I just thought it was funny because you were like saying the greater scream of things, and then I was like... anyways.
But yes, so, you know, she has just like Luke... I think she has a combination of Luke and Anakin because, like Luke, she's living kind of a boring, mundane life. You know, there's really not a whole lot of thrills to her life. But similar to Anakin, is she's also just surviving. You know, a slave's greatest hope is just to survive. You know,
right?
And I think that's really what Rey does. I mean, with just one, you know, brief scene of her scavenging, which I'm glad it's only one scene because that would have been boring to watch for a long time.
yes.
But it's, which is kind of cool. Like, I think that scene is a little bit boring intentionally because it's like, it kind of plugs you into her life. What's her life like? It sucks. It's boring, you know?
Right.
And it's more, but worse than being boring is it doesn't, she's not thinking about it in the sense of like, oh, this is going to be fun today. It's just like, I need to survive today. You know, she needs to scavenge in order to trade things to Unkar Plot for food. So her life sucks. let's just get right down to it. I mean, it sucks. But as crappy as her life is, and obviously she does dream of something more. I mean, you know, her little moment, you know, Anakin's looking at the stars, Luke looks at the sunset. Now you have Rey watching a ship fly off. And I think it's more subtle than it was with Luke and even Anakin. But it is, you know, you watch her watch the ship take off. But even before that, the scene before that, when she's cleaning her scavenged stuff, she looks over at that old lady who's doing the exact same thing. And it's very clear that Rey has this recognition of like, oh my God, that's going to be me. This is my life.
Right.
And I think there is like a sadness to that, but, and then immediately like somebody bumps into her and, you know, shouts at her probably to hurry up. And she gets right back to it, and she's right back in the zone. But the thing is, like, Rey doesn't even have the opportunity, like Luke or even Anakin, to really dream too big. Her dreams don't have a lot of – there's not a concrete
expression to it. No, there's not much substance
exactly.
to it. It's like, my family comes back, and we're going to leave.
Yeah. What does that
– That's kind of the dream.
Right.
You know,
It's but it's
what is that? What right. where's the foundation for that? You know, it's just sort of floating around, and it doesn't have any real tangible solid something to hold on to, unfortunately.
Yeah. And like you were saying, Jason, I mean, that's exactly – so just like Luke and Anakin had an obligation to Tatooine, her obligation to Jakku is this this wishful thinking that her family is going to come back for her. You know, and she does. She expresses that throughout the film. She tells BB-8 first, and then she's going to tell Finn, and then she even tells Han. You know,
and Maz.
And Maz. Yeah, so everybody that invites her, she kind of refuses because she feels – obligated to return to Jakku in hopes that her family is going to come back.
She gets caught up in this adventure that takes her off planet because she has no choice, and she all she can think about is going back because of this obligation. You know, it's really, and going into this movie, I think you and I speculated that she was going to be the reluctant hero.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't know this was going to be the reason. You know,
right?
And so. Excuse me. It was kind of interesting to watch her hold on to that. And then finally, you know, after getting caught up with BB-8 and then Finn and then Han, and she finally gets to have this moment with Maz, who tells her they're never coming back. After this vision that she gets when she touches Luke's lightsaber. Which completely opens up a whole new world of possibilities to her, and she's terrified of it. She's completely terrified of it, and she doesn't want anything to do with it. And Maz has to tell her, look, they're never coming back. You know that. And she doesn't want to believe it, and so she runs off into the forest. And she's had her whole world rocked.
Mm. Yeah.
So.
And that's, yeah, you know... And that's a great point. You know, she's, you know, it's funny because her invitations to adventure become more concrete along the way. I mean, I think, you know, initially with BB-8, it's just, oh, I've got to get this droid to a secret base and then I can go back home and wait for my family. And then Finn saying, like, well, why don't you just leave? Like, you could do anything. Like, you're a pilot. You've got these skills. Why stay there? And again, she reiterates, it's my family. Han offers her a job, like, come kick it with Chewie and I on the Falcon and make a living as a smuggler, you know, or try to make a living as a smuggler.
Right.
And, you know, she's like, offering her a sense of belonging, but she's like, you know, I'm flattered. I'm honored, but I got to go home. I got to wait. I got to wait for my family.
Right.
And then Maz, again, kind of gives it even a little bit more of a direction to where that call could go. She's saying, you know, take that lightsaber. You know, that sense of belonging, it's not, you know, it's not behind you, it's ahead of you. And there is still somebody that could come for you. And she recognizes Luke. She's like, yeah, take it, go. You know, she's kind of encouraging her. She doesn't say it directly, but I think what Maz is kind of encouraging her to do, though, is take that lightsaber, go find Luke, find out who you're supposed to be. Find out the truth of who you are. And exactly like you said, she's terrified of that. She's had a very harsh life, and to think that she could become something is just it's too much to take in. You know, there's that great line in the trailer. Obviously, it's not in the movie, but when she, you know, you hear Maz Kanata say, "Who are you? I'm no one." You know, I think the purpose of those trailers, a lot of the lines aren't in the movie, but the trailer itself tells us something about our characters, right? Like Finn is somebody looking for something to believe in and to fight for. Yeah. Rey is a nobody. She doesn't see herself of having value. And here Maz is telling her, like, there's, you know, this force, it's calling out to you. It's let the light guide you. But Rey is terrified by it because it's something completely new and different. So she literally runs away.
Yeah.
And the rest of the movie is really like it's this constant awakening of that power that Maz has told her about. You know, you see her basically out force probe Kylo.
Yeah.
And then for the first time, she force tricks a stormtrooper / James Bond.
Right.
And then she's going to use a lightsaber.
There's going to be another James Bond movie where 007 goes off planet. He goes to infiltrate Starkiller base and gets force tricked by this girl and leaves Starkiller base before it blows up.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the next James Bond movie.
Oh, for sure. Well, James is there to free her. He's not actually being force tricked. He's just pretending to be.
Oh, okay.
He's undercover. Got it.
So that wasn't her power.
No, definitely not. But no, you know, so, and I think you're right. You know, I don't think Ray doesn't, I don't think she formally pursues that adventure until literally the end of the movie, when you see her take some sense of ownership about this inherent power that's within her, and this inherent force ability she has. Is she takes the lightsaber and she goes to Luke, and obviously nothing is spoken when she finally encounters Luke at the end of the film, but you know, just that gesture of her holding out the lightsaber to him, to me, and again, I'm sure there's lots of ways of interpreting it, I think the way I look at it is this is finally her promise to become whatever the Force is calling her to be. You know, it's not nearly as specific as Luke or Anakin's. And I think, again, it's that we got to wait and see what happens in the rest of the sequels. You know, I think what Rey finally does, though, is she promises to let the light guide her. And that guides her to Luke, and now we'll see where that takes her from here.
And at this point in time, you know, for us, her journey is so uncertain. But not only for us is it uncertain, but also for her. She's not entirely certain where this journey, where this path is taking her. But she's, you know, made this promise, made this commitment to follow it wherever that goes. And it is sort of weird because, you know, where the call to the hero's journey in the prequels and the original trilogy is dealt with in one section of the movie, we take an entire movie to sort of explore a reluctant character's answer to that call. And I think that's the biggest difference between Anakin and Luke and Rey. Is Anakin and Luke, while they, you know, had some initial refusal or questioning about this journey, they were ready. They wanted to take it. They wanted to accept it, and they were not reluctant to actually dream about being the hero, being a Jedi, you know, doing that sort of thing. Where Rey is incredibly reluctant to do so. She doesn't want anything to do with it because she's waiting for this wish, this hope of her family coming back. And I think that's the biggest difference between our three characters, is Rey fights that call so much longer than Anakin or Luke ever did.
Right. Because she doesn't even know where she comes from.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing. She's seeking some sense of who she is in order to move forward, right? Like, Anakin had a mother who encouraged him, go do this. This is who you're supposed to be. Luke, you know, he loses his family, but at least he knows where he's coming from, and he recognizes that he can do something more. And now he can do that. Rey has no idea where she's even coming from.
It's also interesting because Luke and Anakin have some sort of sense of where they're going and what they're pursuing. Anakin is, you know, pursuing the Jedi. He's been told he's the chosen one. He's going to come back and free the slaves. You know, he's got that sort of destination to become this chosen one. Luke leaves because he wants to learn about the ways of the Force, to become a Jedi like his father. He wants to learn about his father and become like his father. Rey doesn't really have any concrete idea of not only who she is, but where she's going either.
Right.
And that's also an interesting difference. So,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. Good pick. Good call. So there you have it. Kind of our initial look at, and it's obviously a little more difficult with Rey, but looking at our new heroes and kind of how they all responded to their call to adventure.
Exactly. All right,
Jason. Before we go, though, why don't we bang out a Larian inquiry? Because I know we
have
several to get through, but let's get through at least one for today.
Right. And we got a short one here from Christian Ranke, who says, "Greetings from Norway. I love the movie, and it definitely, of course, this is all about The Force Awakens, folks. I loved the movie, and it definitely gave the good old Star Wars feeling. I love the new trio, and especially Rey. Cried when the original characters turned up. I have some issues with the movie, though. I didn't care for Snoke, and I really hope he turns out to be Darth Plagueis, since that would be awesome. You don't want to get me started on Snoke and Plagueis, just saying. No, it would not be awesome. Anyway, sorry, Christian. I'll let you finish here. I really hope they will explain how Rey suddenly can use the Force, you know, mind tricks and all. I also hope the balance of the Force that Lucas concluded in Return of the Jedi will not be disrespected by the new writers, since it would be really concerning to me if what Anakin did in Return of the Jedi only lasted for 30 years. But I am happy with the movie, although it doesn't have Lucas's magic touch. So, and there is our Force Awakens Larian response reaction by Christian Reinke. Thoughts on that?
You know, I think you and I both share the notion that we don't want Snoke to be Plagueis. I think, and you know, and it's interesting, Christian, because you know, you make the point that you know you don't want what Anakin or what basically Anakin and Luke did at the end of Jedi. You know, they finally do bring the Force back into balance. You don't want that to be undone. If Snoke is Plagueis, it's undone directly, like right off the bat, because basically bringing the Force into balance, I think, in George's story was defeating the Sith, which is what happened in Return of the Jedi.
Right.
So if Snoke is Plagueis, I think that more directly screws with everything more than anything else would. So I think the notion, you know, I think on the surface that Plagueis is finally going to be in a film, that's kind of cool. But I don't think so at all, because I think it completely undoes what Anakin does in Return of the Jedi. So yeah. That's why I don't want it. I don't,
surface level, that's a really cool idea. Oh, cool. We get to hear about Darth Plagueis back in, you know, Revenge of the Sith, and then he shows up here, you know, on the surface. That's kind of cool. I'm not going to lie. But underneath, in addition to, you know, what Carl is saying, I do think it would completely undermine the whole victory that Luke and Anakin achieve at the end of Return of the Jedi, but it also sort of makes Palpatine a little bit ignorant in the prequels, which he is not.
Right.
Because, yes, he's completely masterminded this entire war to his advantage, so that no matter how it ends, he's the victor. But, oh yeah, he thought he killed his master, but not really.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, that I don't want that. I want my prequel villain to be all powerful, unlimited power. You know. Anyway, and I'm sorry. I don't want to just jump all over that, Christian, because you know that is your opinion, and I do know people who like that idea. But yeah, that's one thing that. When I heard that theory, I had a very knee-jerk reaction no to it. I had not heard that theory until I went to see the movie the second time with Kyle Bakka and Joey Letson. And they were like, oh, yeah, I kind of like this, you know, Snoke is Plagueis theory. And I was like, wait, what theory? I hadn't heard of it. Apparently, they've been going around before. So, and I completely, like, jumped all over them and said no. Anyway, sorry. I have strong feelings about that.
Yeah. Well, I do too. I mean, I think it severely weakens our overall saga story if you're retreading an old villain. And it diminishes who Kylo is. It diminishes who Snoke is and what the First Order is. And I appreciate your point, Christian, too, though, about you know, you don't want to see, you know, the balance of the Force kind of disrespected. You don't want to see what was accomplished at Return of the Jedi to last only for 30 years. And that makes, you know, that's the same hesitation I still have after seeing this movie 9 times. You know, at the end of the day, if I was saying this to my friend yesterday when we went, I said, you know, if for some reason somebody hated The Force Awakens or decides they don't really like the sequel trilogy when it's all come, you know, said and done, I don't have to watch it. You know what I mean? Return of the Jedi is, it does have that perfect ending, that fairy tale ending that everything is great now and everyone lives happily ever after. But that's also not real life. real life is never happily ever after. And I think that's what they were kind of tapping into, is while still maintaining the fairy tale, can things still go wrong? And the answer is, of course, always. Sadly, that's how life goes. So I finally got to the point where I'm okay with that, with the fact that, you know, this story is compelling enough to follow Return of the Jedi. And think of it this way, you know, if you're an EU fan, which I'm sure almost every Star Wars fan at some point in their life was into the EU, if they're a bigger fan, the EU is literally full of war and conflict from the day after Return of the Jedi until 60 years later. So to put that in perspective, you know, in the EU, we never have a happily ever after, ever. You know,
well, the thing is, though, with bringing balance to the Force, and yeah, they had a happily ever after for the moment,
right?
There at the end of Return of the Jedi, and you can still continue to have war and conflict while the Force is still relatively in balance. I just think that means the Sith can't rise to power again,
right?
Which is why I hope Plagueis is just, or not Plagueis, Snoke. I can't believe that was a Freudian slip. That Snoke is just some sort of dark side user and not actually a Sith. It'd be kind of cool to see if he was maybe sort of a cast off from the Inquisitors that we're seeing in Rebels. But then again, in some of the material that we're getting coming out, apparently he's someone who's been hanging around the political spectrum since Return of the Jedi. So who knows? I need to do more research into that. So, he's still a very mysterious figure and we don't know much about him at all.
Right. And we're not going to till 8 or 9 more.
Right. Exactly.
But no, I think too, Maz Kanata makes the point, you know, to Rey when she says, you know, what fight when hot, you know, when they're sitting down, and she says the only fight that there has ever been against the dark side. And she mentions, you know, it's taken on many forms. It was the Sith, and then it was the Empire, and now it's the First Order. It's not the Sith anymore, but the dark side still exists. It kind of always exists. Evil always exists. The thing is we have to continue to fight it. And I think the Force to a certain degree was brought into balance. And if it only lasted 30 years, that's okay. Cause like at the beginning of the movie, you know, Lor San Tekka makes the point that, you know, there's so much despair in the galaxy and there always will be if there's no Jedi, because the Jedi help keep the Force in balance. But the Jedi have been basically eradicated again because of Kylo Ren. And I think that makes sense that, you know, I'm very interested to see more of why Kylo turned, because I think that'll make a lot more sense for us as well. You know, to me, it obviously has something to do with his desire to be powerful and to be in control. You know, your son is gone. He was weak and foolish like his father, so I destroyed him. I love that line. Sorry, I was doing that to Jason before we started.
But it's such a cheesy Star Wars line, and it's so great.
I love it. But yeah, no, so...
You asked me earlier, who talks like that? And I was like, people in Star Wars. Everybody in Star Wars.
You can write this crap, but you can't say it, George. Or JJ.
Or JJ, apparently. just like Leia, you know. No, it was Snoke who
seduced him to the dark side.
Yeah. That whole line is like such an awkward exposition, too.
Yeah. But yeah, so anywho, Christian, thanks for the, you know, those are some great inputs, and, you know, I think a lot of people would like to see Snoke as Plagueis, and a lot of people are wary about the fact that, you know, maybe this climactic, heroic ending to Return of the Jedi has now been undone, but I think they're going to make more sense out of why that happened, and I think they're anchoring that in the reality of life, that there is no such thing as happily ever after, but that goodness can still endure, so...
Funny thing is, and I'm going to be kind of weird here and bring in a Doctor Who reference, but the Christmas special for Doctor Who this year sort of dealt with that idea of happily ever after. And the Doctor says to his companion River Song that he can't have a happily ever after because, you know, it never lasts. And she says, well, happily ever after isn't forever. It just means time. So... which was kind of interesting. And if you want my further thoughts on the Christmas special, go see my Doctor Who podcast, Talking Time Lords. Anyway, sorry. Shameless self-promotion. But yeah, it's just interesting that we're talking about Happily Ever After here just after I talked about an entire episode that revolved around Happily Ever After and what that really means. So, right.
Yeah. Well, your Happily Ever After is more endearing if it endures something worse, right? Like what they set up, the kind of the element of peace and justice that has been restored at the end of Return of the Jedi is new. It's being set up now. Now we get to look at how does it endure and can it endure? Because otherwise right. It's for naught, you know?
We could still get that Happily Ever After. This is just a bump in the road, an obstacle to that Happily Ever After. Right. So we'll have to see how it all shakes out.
Yes. So, yeah, I think that kind of nails it all out. What do you think?
I think so. Before we leave, obviously, we want to remind everybody about our new poll for next episode. What one word would you use to describe Return of the Jedi? This will be the last one of these polls that Carl and I will not be, throwing in our 2 cents worth on. But we want your thoughts. What one word would you use to describe Return of the Jedi? And Carl, where can they tell us?
On Facebook, facebook.com/wampazarpodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampazar, or shoot us an email at wampazarpodcast@gmail.com. If you've yet to write a review for us in the iTunes store, we could always appreciate those. It's been a while since we've had one. So if you're a new listener maybe and you like the show, maybe you'd take a moment just to rate us on iTunes, maybe even write a review. We'd always appreciate that.
Indeed. Indeed. And we are not going to be starting the Return of the Jedi radio drama this episode because Carl put together something a little special that we just want to cap off the episode with. And you want to tell everybody what that is?
Yeah. So just for the heck of it, I figured it'd be fun to play around a little bit of like editing equipment. I'm not very good at it, but I put together like a trio of our heroes themes. So it's Anakin's, Luke's, and Rey's theme kind of all into one song that I'm going to play right after the episode. So stick around if you would like to hear that.
Exactly. And please do, folks. But until next time, I think that wraps up this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. It's been episode number 165, Your First Steps. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.